Welcome, everyone, to the X Factor Files podcast. This is a very special episode because you're getting two episodes in 1 week because Philip and I are joined by the fantastic Stephanie Williams. Stephanie, how are you?
I am fantastic. I am recovering from MomoCon, but other than that, I'm pretty good.
Yeah, I showed Philip that you were deadlifting on the con floor. Very impressive from what Philip says. I don't go to the gym or lift, but he does.
Oh my goodness, it's goals, like, to be able to do that much. I could not. That's awesome.
They were across from us. So I sat down. I'm like, man, why is this weight bench across from us? And a gym was set up. So they had people like bench pressing. So myself and Chris Lee, he did a little something. And then one of the guys that was like helping us with our stuff, he went. And then the following day they did deadlifts. And I was like, you know what? Let me get a pump in before I go to my panel.
Absolutely. So, we've heard you before on other podcasts, and I was always insanely jealous, and I was so nervous to reach out to you for this podcast.
Oh, no.
Because you've been on Homo Superior, you've been on Grey Malkin Lane, and just so lovely. I was the one who submitted the question about Real Housewives to Homo Superior when they posed that question to you. Maybe we'll get into that with Star Trek fan casting for Real Housewives, because lots of possibilities. But we really want to focus and to give you some background on what we've been doing on our show. So I sort of am switching us up every single week in a 4 week rotation. So we do an interview with someone where they bring three of their favorite issues for their favorite character to make us fall in love with their favorite character. We call it the rule of three. Otherwise, we do X Factor Investigations, Alpha Flight, and the fourth one is going through all of the Marvel Star Trek comics from the late 90s. So all the Paramount tie-ins, and we're just getting near the end of Star Trek Unlimited. So that's the same episode that's posting today with this episode. So it's a very Star Trek week. So we're so fortunate to have you on because you have contributed to the Star Trek Pride special. So why don't you tell us about what it's like writing within the current Star Trek comic landscape, because it's so different from the 90s. There are really so many more tools in the toolbox, or toys in the toy chest, if we want to go that way.
There are so many. And it's funny, last year I was in talks, I was talking to Heather Antos, who is the group editor for the Star Trek comics at IDW. And we were just kind of like, you know, spitballing some ideas. I was kind of telling her what I was interested in. And I don't know about y'all, but like for me, TNG was always my go-to, and then the original. And then from there, I just kind of branched out. But like TNG was my bread and butter because like I just love Captain Picard. So when she circled back to me like a year later for the Pride special, she was like, I'm so sorry, you cannot do TNG, but you can do Disco. And I was like, okay, that's cool. Because I started watching Disco because my parents started watching. It was so funny. I went over to their house one day and like they were two seasons deep into Disco. And I was like, oh, I didn't know you guys were like watching this. So it's been a nice little bonding experience for them. So it was really nice to have a chance to add a story to this world with, so there's just so many characters. And I picked two of my faves are grumpy sometimes, Reno. I just adore her. And then also like a really spicy Stamets. Like I love him too.
Those are excellent choices.
Yeah. I just think they have a really fun chemistry, and I wanted to highlight queer friendships, even though, I mean, they wouldn't call each other besties, but in my fanfic, in my mind, like they're their besties in another universe.
And a mirror universe, perhaps.
Yeah.
Ooh. Philip got me watching Disco because he started watching it. Then he's like, hey, let's start it from the beginning again. So similar to you, there was someone else watching it. And I'm like, okay, I'll give it a try. And now we're in the last season. Like, there's like one episode left. And I know that disco has had its detractors, but it really set up this current Star Trek that we have. Disco is the reason why we have Strange New Worlds and Lower Decks and the upcoming Section 31 movie. Starfleet Academy is the series in development. Like, it really kickstarted a whole lot. I think in a way that Paramount probably hoped that the 2009 movie would have, and it just didn't. But Discovery is really, it paved the way for so much that we're enjoying right now. So it's so cool that you got to play with two characters that are within that world, and one that's been there since the beginning, and then one who's come along since we began the journey with them. So that's incredible. So it sounds like, and I avoid spoilers. I've seen the cover for the Pride special, and that's it. So I obviously haven't read it at the time of recording, but from what it sounds like, from what you said, people are playing in different worlds with this issue. So you were each given a wonderful sandbox in which to construct a story, making sure that you didn't interfere with things, it sounds like. They're happening in other stories because it's a nice anthology book. You get a taste of a lot of things. So when you were writing, and as you're working with the editorial team and everything, did you develop this at sort of a jumping on point at all for anyone who wanted to read Star Trek comics?
At least I try to. Whenever I'm writing a comic, I try to keep in the back of my mind, like, this could be someone's first whatever, their first entry to, like, me as a writer, their first entry into the world, whatever, or this publisher, whatever it is. I try to make it as reader friendly, newbie friendly as possible, while also giving folks who have been keeping up with the comics or keeping up with the show to give them something to kind of sink their teeth into. So I just wanted to, if anything, highlight these two characters and what I thought their strongest points were, or like what made them, you know, interesting. And I feel like they have a very interesting back and forth with their two differing personalities. So I kind of leaned into the quippiness, and I'm hoping, well, if you love quippiness between two characters, then you'll absolutely, like, probably say, I think I'm gonna go watch Discovery now, and I can't wait for Reno to, like, join the cast, because then we'll see the interactions between the two. So, like, for me, it's always trying to entice people to go check out more.
Absolutely. And I think the way I view an anthology book like this, and I pick up DC's Pride issue, for example, every year, even though I'm not familiar with those characters because I'm a queer person and I want to see what's going on. Like, is this a great jumping on point? So I'm so glad that you are not only a caretaker, to use a Voyager term, for the characters, but you're trying to leverage them in a way that will be like, hey, why don't you come on this journey with the fans that are writing this and drawing this and lettering this? We all love Star Trek, so here's a way that you can find an entry point too, and hopefully gain new fans for Star Trek, but also, like you said, you as a writer too. It's a great way to showcase in a small way, this is what I've got. Like, it is, how many pages do you have? Like 8, 10?
No, mine was 6, and it's always, man. I've had the luck of, or the good fortune, I should say, like, starting off my career, I did a lot of one-page comics, like web comics. So telling a story as quickly as I can is just such a small space. Even tweets, I'm thinking about those, like trying to tell stories within 280 characters, or I forgot what they bumped it to until, like, you know who took over. But yeah. So, but those 6 pages, sometimes you feel like, man, dude, like, I have enough, but then it's like, oh, I definitely have enough. So, like, what am I cutting and what am I keeping that is going to make this 6 pages worth someone reading? So it was 6 pages, and it was pedal to the metal from start to finish.
Excellent.
That's awesome. I'm trying to figure out how to, like, the caretaker, like, you have these characters, and did they ever give instructions of like what you write is going to be canon? Like, are there, was there anything like that? Are the comic, I feel like in my head the comics are all canon, just like anything else.
To me, they're all canon because Paramount definitely is like looking at our scripts and saying, hey, either this character sounds a little off, so like let's tweak this a little bit so it can sound a little bit more a character, or any other suggestions to make sure that it's just in world. So yeah, like to me it's canon, and if it's not, it's still canon.
I agree. I mean, I think headcanon is so important in a fandom. Yeah. And it can be anything you want, and it's so hard if we want to talk about Star Wars, when Disney acquired that property, and then they said, well, all the novels that came before, that's just, it's Apocrypha. Still a thing, but it's sort of imaginary. And it's like, no, like I read those books growing up, like
yeah. That,
to me, that's still somewhat real somewhere out there. And I think the same thing can be applied to Star Trek, which has such a long history. I mean, I'm currently collecting all the DC issues, and there's hundreds, like, and some of them are very odd. I want to say that Paramount back in the 80s and 90s, probably not as diligent as they are now in sort of course correcting some of those things. I mean, TNG, if we want to talk about favorite episodes or what really drew us and why TNG is a comfort show, to me, just like you, I love Sub Rosa. I love Beverly Crusher. Just,
oh my God, yes.
Getting some ghost D, because why not? Like, and that was an episode of the TV show that is canon. Like, if an episode can go that far off the rails, anything you want is canon.
Yeah, and then too, the way that I kind of view these anthology stories is like an episode, right? Like, this is a quick little, instead of 30 minutes or an hour, it's just, it's a quick little 5-10 minute episode, a short, if you will. So, I mean, why not?
Yeah, exactly. It reminds me of the short treks that...
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And then they have the short treks, which are like the tweet length treks that they have, where it's like 1 minute. Philip, did you have a question or a comment?
Yeah. I don't know if it was IDW or someone else, they did like the Alien Spotlight series. So there's the Ferengi one where Moogie's on the cover with the future's female. There's a Trill one, an Andorian one. If you could do one, what Star Trek species do you think is ripe for either spotlight or a deep dive into?
Oh my God, that is a good one. I don't know. There's just, I don't, and it's funny because I ended up coming up with a completely new species for another Star Trek story that I did that's coming out for Star Trek 500. Because I couldn't choose.
That's wonderful.
Ooh, I don't know. I might have to email you guys on that one.
There are so many species out there, and you're like, who would I want to hang out with for a day?
I don't know.
Like, which planet am I cruising to other than Ryza? Because
of course,
I mean,
yes.
I mean, if I can make a case for Betazoids,
I wouldn't be mad at that.
Because somehow all the Betazoids are hot, like the species across the board. Whenever a new one shows up, you're like, this might be the most attractive planet.
There's a Peter David book about Troy and Riker, and it sort of goes into some of the culture. I'm like, and I just devoured that book. I'm like, yes, give me some like death rattling Bloxana as the patron saint of our Trek trivia team, and one of my favorite characters too. I just love her.
Yeah, we need to get you out here to the Twin Cities on the second Wednesday of every month. There is Star Trek trivia, and we are on an all gay team.
That sounds fun. Yes,
and got first place last month.
Congratulations!
When we were not there.
We weren't there. Maybe it's a coincidence. I'm not sure, but it's a lot of fun. and a pretty thriving Trek fandom scene. Like, we pack this bar on the south side of Minneapolis one Wednesday a month, like, to the gills. And especially in summer when weather is nice and people are coming out, dozens of people for Star Trek trivia.
I just love how it just, I mean, I'm pretty sure Star Wars, they have their people too, but Star Trek, every time I meet a fellow Trekkie, it's just this bubbly, wonderful feeling. And when I talk to them, it's usually like another older relative that got them into it, either grandparents, their parents, an aunt or an uncle. And I just love it. Cause like for me, it was my grandparents. Right. And it was watching the old original series because one, we didn't have cable, and two, cartoons went off. So like this, like on a Channel 26 in Chicago, like they would air old Star Trek episodes. And that's how I ended up becoming a Trekkie myself, because, well, I didn't have Fox Kids was off. So that's what I was watching. But those episodes, or Star Trek, the original series, just like Twilight to me, it's just so timeless and always forever relevant. Star Trek in general is just always forever relevant. But going back and watching those older episodes, I'm like, oh, this is why Star Trek is just such a freaking comfort. That and TNG.
Yeah.
I love that's how I got into it too. It was on Channel 29. You could have the original series and then TNG. And then eventually it was two episodes of TNG. And I think I might have even taped over Mary Poppins because I was recording it, which might have been a big oops. But yeah, we would watch it. And then now my mom also watches it when they, on one of the channels, they have one of each of the series. And my mom actually was down and she's like, I need you to pull up Enterprise. I need to watch the last episode. And I was like, what? Enterprise? So specific. And it's like, I made it all the way through. I just need to watch it to the end. And then I don't need to watch it anymore.
And I really.
So now Disco, every time she comes down, she messes up the name, but she always wants to watch Discovery and then Strange New Worlds.
Strange New Worlds is, that was one I wasn't expecting. I was not expecting to like it as much as I did, but that second episode when Lieutenant Uhura kind of got her spotlight with the music, and I was like, okay, this is what I love. And I was like, okay, well, you got a fan of me. I guess I'm tuning in every Wednesday, every Thursday for new episodes. I was like never
Thursdays,
watching.
I think.
Yeah, Thursdays, right? Yeah. Tune in every Thursday.
Nice. And Philip referenced it. If anyone else loves their antenna, like I still do. I mean, we had cable off and on growing up. It was unpredictable. It was when it was cheap.
Yes.
But then as soon as they're like, oh, your introductory offer is done, it's like, nope, we're done for now for another year. But even now, Heroes and Icons, which I think is a nationally syndicated antenna station, just like MeTV, airs it every night. So as we're recording, the original series is on, then Next Gen, DS9, Voyager, Enterprise. For 5 hours, 6 nights a week, people can watch Star Trek for free, which I think is so cool. And I really hope that people are getting that experience that we got growing up, that, oh, you know, my grandparents, I'm hanging out with them and they have it on. Or every night after supper.
Down.
Yeah. So, it's still a super accessible series that I think has resonated. I mean, if you're talking TOS to Enterprise, that's a 40-year spectrum that you have going there of Star Trek stories that you can tap into for free every night. So that's my plug for an antenna, if it will work. having lived in Chicago for a few years, I know if you're on like the first floor or second floor of an apartment building, you're not going to get signal. But if you can find that signal. So TNG and TOS, what are some moments that stand out to you that maybe you want to explore further, either as a fan or as a writer, but, and not giving away something that obviously is in a pitch, hopefully. We don't want to ruin it for you.
No, I'm actually writing something right now, is a deviation to an episode from TOS. So I can't talk about that. Let me find another one.
But we will be waiting with bated breath for that to come
yes,
out.
Yes, yes. I am so excited about that one because it also marries together like some real Star Trek real life history for one of the actors. So it was a nice little meta thing. So let me move to TNG.
Yeah.
Let's see. I always love that episode where Data makes his own kid, basically.
Yes.
Yes. I don't know, like that is one of my favorite episodes. I would like to, in my mind, if like she's still there and she doesn't deteriorate and he's able to fix her, like what does that look like? Like what does that relationship continue to grow and look like on the Enterprise? The other episode that I like, just because Captain Picard, is when his old professor comes to visit and is like, hey, like you got to go on this adventure with me. And he's like, I can't go because I'm here, like I'm committed to this. And then the professor, unfortunately, does not make it when he goes on that little that adventure. And it just starts this whole thing, and you find out what he was looking for. It was still connected to what Picard had going on the ship. And I always wonder, like, well, what if he would have went with him? What would that look like? So those are two that stand out. And of course, I would love to explore the Crusher and Picard relationship. I was talking to Claudia Gray, who is a well-known Star Wars writer. She absolutely loves Star Trek too. And actually, she shares a story of how she got into, or what made her really love TNG. It was the Borg finale, and like not knowing that that was like going to leave on a cliffhanger or whatever. But anyway, we were talking about that relationship and like maybe us writing something that I could write, like how it begins, she could write how it ends. We'll leave the Captain Picard, the Picard show alone. Like we will act like that doesn't exist. But what an interesting relationship. What a fun one on top of that. That one, and also his relationship, or maybe not so much, with why am I blanking on character's name? Whoopi Goldberg's character.
Guinan.
Oh my God. Lightning will strike me down for not being able to remember Guinan. But I've always found that very interesting too, because they've met at different points in time. So what did that possibly look like? Because they're always traveling back and forth, time traveling, which I didn't realize how much they freaking time traveled in Star Trek. It wasn't until like I was getting into some things like, wait, no, like it's either accidentally or on purpose, but like they're always they're time traveling.
I'm sure you're reviewing everything and you're like, another damn temporal incursion? Like what? Why? How?
Like, are these just time? Like, are these just randomly rolling in space? And apparently they are, but yes.
Like,
that's why I love the in DS9, they have those temporal agents that show up and they're like,
yes,
the most boring people ever. And they're like, oh no, we don't, the temporal affairs department is here. Oh, so good.
Yeah, I hope your TOS story that connects to real life Trek lore is about Shatner stealing the wigs. Because that would just be phenomenal. Like Captain Kirk has a wig obsession, and like the Tribbles falling out of the ceiling, like he opens up a wardrobe and they just tumble out and it's all the same haircut. And so looking ahead to Star Trek 500, that's coming out in September.
September 4th.
So that's a milestone. And is that 500 IDW issues?
It sure is.
That is.
What?
Yeah. That, because IDW, they adapted the Kelvin universe with Star Trek 2009 and all of them. Mm-hmm. And they've been pumping out comics for a long time. How did you approach a project like that where you're like, this is a huge landmark issue? How, I can't even form words to figure out, like, how do you honor that legacy, but also you're like, no, I have a fantastic idea, and this is my second time contributing to a big anthology project like this? Like, how do you approach something where it could be very, very daunting? You're a professional, so I'm sure it's not me. I'd be like, I have no clue what I can add to this, aside from Captain Kirk's wigs, and they're probably not going to accept that pitch. So walk us through that process where you're like, okay, did you get the call? Did you place the call? What went on?
So I got the call. It was like, it's funny. It's like literally the morning after I turned in the final revision for, no, actually the first draft for the Pride issue. And I was like, oh, wait, that was like a quick response. And I was like, oh, no, this is a new this is a new email. So I was like, okay, cool. So again, like Heather's like, yeah, like, hey, we'd love to have you on for this. And like, it's a big issue. So I had to like not think about that because I would have freaked myself out. But in doing so, I was like, again, if this is an entry point to just the Star Trek universe for someone, myself as a writer, whatever it is, like I want to write like what Star Trek has always meant to me and like inject it in the story. So again, another discovery. This time, Michael Burnham, who, funny enough, I didn't stand her the first season or so. And then I forgot when the switch happened. I was like, oh, wait, I love this little trash baby and I will guard her with my life. But it was really the story that I had for her. It's funny enough, like it really synergized with just what Star Trek always meant for me. So the story just, in this, and it happens every now and again, but not too much. Like it just came to me like that. So like I immediately sent that pitch first. And then of course you have to send other pitches just in case. So I sent that one. That was my first, the one at the top. And then like I sent like three or four other pitches. And thankfully, Heather and then also the folks at Paramount like loved that first pitch. And I was like, oh, thank God, because that's what I wanted to write.
That's so cool. Feel free to use my idea if you need to submit pitch ideas, because it'll direct them towards the one that you actually want to write. So just have it. I'll give you a few more to pad out that list. So it's like Stephanie's fantastic idea and Daryl's shit ideas.
No, Daryl, I think I might mess around and I will probably end up having to write about, which I would have a great time doing that. So I'll make sure that you're in the acknowledgements if that ever ends up happening.
Thank you. I mean, and credit Nichelle Nichols. Yeah. She's the one who totally exposed that. She's like, I had wigs, yes. And I think Paramount like tried to charge her because she took one at the end of a season. And they're like, okay. And she's like, well, what about Bill Shatner? He's stealing all of his wigs.
That is always the funniest piece of Star Wars lore or just history. Because the first time I heard that, I think I cried laughing because I could just picture him like, it's just several wigs hitting underneath like the biggest one. Yes. And he's kind of coming like a drag queen and then he's pulling them wigs out like wigs. That. Wigs on wigs, yes.
Well, there's what's his Mott the barber. Maybe he has a closet full of wigs for when the crew needs to disguise themselves.
Or go on.
That's
the
a plausible thing.
Yeah.
Or just anyone saving their wigs and not giving them back to Mott after the fact.
Speaking of wigs, I don't think we ever saw Picard wear a wig.
No.
I think you're right. I actually think you're right because I think at some point I'm just like, they're gonna throw something on his head through my TNG watch, and they never did. If anything, we got it where you could tell he hadn't shaved in a little bit, but that's about it. A wig never graced his head.
Even when they flash back to him as Lieutenant Junior Grade Science Officer, and his friend gets stabbed, he gets stabbed. Does his friend die?
I think his friend does die.
Yeah.
Oh.
And that's why he has the artificial heart.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the Nausicaan. So, even in that flashback, it was just Patrick Stewart, bald-ass Patrick Stewart.
Supposedly. It's stressful.
Yeah. Yes, Starfleet is stressful. You will lose your hair. And that's why there's a closet of wigs.
You probably should go back a bit when you were talking about what Star Trek means to you and how you were incorporating that into the story. What does Star Trek mean to you? Or is...
I can talk about it. Like, so Star Trek, the reason why it's such a comfort for me is because it always felt like what we could be, right? Like the limitless possibility of humanity if we would get out of our own way. I found it not funny, haha, or weird, but like I couldn't believe that this was the first Star Trek Pride anthology because I don't know, like for me, every time I watched a Star Trek episode, even the ones way back in the 60s, like it just felt so progressive. In a way that was effortlessly so, like it just was. So Star Trek for me has just always been a come as you are. You know, you don't have, like, you can be brave and still be scared at the same time. Like, that's okay. In fact, we champion that. Like, that is what it means to like be a part of Starfleet, is that you are doing things because it's the right thing to do. And you are still going forward, scared shitless, but you're still going forward because you have that badge. So that's what it's just always meant that for me. Like, I hope one day we can, like, as a society, maybe move forward in that way. But Star Trek has just always represented the limitless possibility of what we could be if we would just, I don't know, like, stop doing stuff that we shouldn't be doing.
Agree. That is my favorite part about it, of like the shining example of what we should be aiming for, mm-hmm. and how we treat each other and how we treat ourselves, and sort of the absurdities, like these made up shackles that we are like, oh, we must do this, we must have money. And then Star Trek is like, money? Well, no, you don't. You don't have to go on this deficit mindset about how the world works. And yes, I love that, and similarly hope that we can someday get to that point.
Absolutely.
Have you ever read Star Trek novels?
So, funny enough, no. But I have a backlog of them, like Audible. So, after I had my son, like I got an Audible account because I'm like, well, there's no way that I can read and also do the mommy thing at the same time. Like, some, I still like will read physical books, but Audible just changed the world for me. So I'm next to Star Trek, I am obsessed with Alien. And they're like full Audible productions for a couple of Alien books. So I finally it dawned on me to get some Star Trek. I'm like, are there Star Trek novels? And there are. So I downloaded a bunch of them. I'm hoping during the summer I'll be able to get to some of them because I can only imagine that they're probably stellar. The comics are stellar, and I can only imagine like the novels are too.
Yes. I think it's on Audible. One that I highly recommend is all about Garak from Deep Space Nine. It's called A Stitch in Time, and it's narrated by Andrew Robinson.
Hold on, I'm gonna do this right now. Yes. My credit. Yes.
So it's Garak basically writing about his backstory on Cardassia, and then the present day narration happens after DS9 ends and he's back on Cardassia.
I found it and purchased. Yeah,
because it's one of the I mean, we can go geeky because comics and nerddom. One of the rarest Star Trek paperbacks is A Stitch in Time. And our local comic store posted, hey, we just got a bunch of novels in. And this was like November, early November last year. So I looked, and Philip was doing the comic book run that week. And he is driving there. And I'm like, they have A Stitch in Time. Get it. Get it for $2. It goes for $100 on eBay. Get me that book.
Not that you would ever sell it, but no. It was very specific. Like, you must get this, second row down, third one from the left. Like,
oh my God. Yes.
Like, I zoomed on that picture and I'm like, it's there. And then I proceeded to buy like dozens of other books from them. So they got their money from me.
There's some Cardassian zombies in the one I'm reading right now. And then Imzadi by Peter David was really good. Like, sort of an alternate future. yeah, there's some good Luxana moment in it. So
I know what I'm doing this summer.
Yeah. There's the recent Star Trek Picard one, Firewall, all about Seven of Nine as well.
That one I added immediately. I love Seven of Nine.
And I'm about halfway through it. It's for all of our gay listeners out there, there's queerness in this book. It's wonderful. So it's Seven discovering who she really is, which I think is refreshing for that character.
Yes.
To keep exploring her humanity and everything like that. So there you go, Stephanie, and everyone listening, reading recommendations. And if anyone ever needs more, I have plenty. So
I will be emailing you. I kid you not, it'll be like the middle of July. I'm like, so I burned through all those books that I bought. So do you have any more suggestions?
Yeah, absolutely. So as we're looking ahead to things, so we know 500 is on the horizon. Are you working on other Star Trek related stuff too? Oh, fun.
Yes, that I can't talk about, but I think you two will be exceptionally excited about it. I'm just so happy to finally be in this world. Star Trek was like one of my first fandoms. So it went the thing, because I watched that very early on before I was supposed to. Then of course Alien, and then Star Trek, and then of course we get into X-Men and comics and all of that. But Star Trek is just so near and dear to my heart. Like, it's the first time, like, a black lady in space, like, what's she doing on that ship? And it just started this thing. And then I learned that Mae Jemison was like inspired by Nichelle Nichols, and I thought that was so cool. I went to the movies to see every single one of the newer Star Trek movies. And then whenever they had I finally had watched Wrath of Khan, I was able to watch that in theater. So like, not the one from the early 2000s or whatever that was, which I can make arguments. Like, I'll watch it if it's on. I'm not putting it on, but if it's on, I'm not going to turn. one with Captain Kirk from way back when, when I finally watched it on the big screen, I cried because I was like, oh my God, no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just well-constructed stories overall. And I'm really happy that you're part of the Star Trek comics universe. I mean, IDW has been doing so much to build up the original stories, and the Eisner Award nominations came out, and that one shot about Shax is up for an Eisner Award. Like, that's so cool to see this animated series character get a one-shot comic book, and it's so good that they're like, it deserves an award nomination. Like, that is so cool.
That's dope. Because that gives me hope that I'll be able to do a one-shot with a Lower Decks character. Because also Lower Decks was another show that really surprised me. Like, I watched the first episode, I put it on in the background like I was working on something else, and then I ended up not writing because I was paying attention to Lower Decks. And that's another one that my parents surprised me, and I, you know, I have to stop over there, and like, my dad is like knee deep in Lower Decks. It's always so a surprise cool. When I go over there, like, I'm like, you guys are nerds hardcore.
I tried that with my mom, and I think she was not a fan of, I don't know if it was like how fast everything goes, but I tried. I think a few episodes in, I could convince her to give it a try, and she might. But I just love that you have surprise, like,
every time.
Yeah, it's like, oh, like they get to it first almost.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so cool.
Because Orville I loved. I ended up watching that. I am trying to, Galaxy Quest, right? I'm not making that up. That's not a fever dream. I ran that movie into the ground because one, I loved it because it was like, you know, a Star Trek spoof. But I think that's my dad is the one who introduced me to that movie. I think that might be why he likes Lower Decks so much, because the humor to me is very similar to like a Galaxy Quest, a Orville, and that's probably why he ends up like really liking it.
Nice.
Yeah. I hope you get the opportunity to write whatever you want in the Star Trek pantheon. There's just so much there, and you have such a fun way of approaching characters and making things meaningful. I feel that the stories that I've read that you've written just have a lot of heart, and it comes through, and there's that genuine feeling from the stories that I think when you apply that to Star Trek, it means a whole lot to that fandom too. As Star Trek fans, we've been through it for decades where we're like, oh, they're really just trying to milk this right now. And that's mm-hmm. not what this moment is all about. Like, since Disco came around, it's very connected to emotion. It's very emotionally intelligent Trek, which I can't say for the Kelvin universe. Like, that's very action-oriented. But most everything is very full of heart. And you have that touch to bring to the comics too. So I'm so excited to read stories from you.
Thank you. We'll get ready to be in your fill-ins tomorrow if you're reading. when this issue comes out, because I was like, you know what? Let me do a little tearjerker at the end.
Yeah. I can't be at my desk at work crying.
it's a good one. It's a feel-good tearjerker. So okay. But be ready to be in your fill-ins.
Okay.
So to close out, I need to circle back to Real Housewives Trek Edition. And this is where we can use that time travel that they're using all the time. They can all be in like some timeless resort. Is outside of time and space. They just show up much like they do with the crossover series. It's not Summer House. What is it called? Ultimate Girls Trip that they do on Peacock now, where it's like, wow. Universe is colliding. So
I thought you were going to make a Lower Decks reference. Girls Trip.
That too.
Yes. Okay. So I'm going to go all TNG.
Okay.
And let's see. Patrick Stewart to me, or Picard, is going to be my Nene Leakes. Riker is going to be my Phaedra. Worf will be, because I'm going Atlanta.
Yes. I can see Riker becoming like an undertaker for funsies for a couple seasons.
Well, and just like, and also like, I'm a lawyer too. And like all these different, like just a serial entrepreneur. Let's see, Worf. I want to say Sheree, just because I feel like Worf would be like, yeah, I've got a line that comes out spring, summer, fall. Like, I don't know. Yes. That would just be funny. Deanna is our Portia, because she does not, Portia gives dumb blonde, even though, but, and Deanna doesn't give that either. But I don't know. I just like Deanna as Portia. And Beverly Crusher. Probably my Candy.
Okay.
Yeah. Those are my core five. And I'm almost forgetting. Oh, Data.
Ooh, that's a tough one.
I know. Maybe Cynthia.
Okay. Yep.
And then I need somebody who's over the top for oh my god, why am I blanking? Not Kendra, because that's crazy. That's definitely not her name. Miss America, what is her name?
Kenya Moore.
Why am I saying Kenya Moore
hair care?
I'll give Kenya Moore to Forge.
Okay.
Because now I'm thinking of when Kenya told them that her dog passed away, and like Cynthia reacted the way that she did. It was not a funny moment. It shouldn't have been a funny moment, but it's the way that Cynthia reacts and Kenya reacts in turn. Now I'm just picturing all of them together on the Enterprise when that's happening, and I need to write this.
And, I can see LaForge / Kenya coming up with the Leah Brahms holodeck simulation and having the real Leah Brahms walk in on that, that's totally a Kenya thing.
Absolutely.
She'd be like, it's not like that. And then she would accuse someone of having a sex dungeon. So.
Oh. Yeah. Oh, we need a Star Trek housewife situation. I'll figure it out. I'm going to work on this pitch.
Okay.
And it'll be a holodeck one shot, and I'm going to figure this out.
Is there a supervillain like Hornacheev to just walk in and just order everyone about and be super imperious?
Oh, that's going to be one of the husbands they divorced from the earlier seasons.
I was going to, or like a Evolve Crusher.
Hmm.
Wesley, other, like, so he spent time in another universe. Another reality, yep. Another reality. And he like comes back, he's changed, he's seen war, he's seen all these things, and he comes back and he's like this ball buster. So.
Yes. And somewhere floating out there, who would be the Marlowe?
Oh, that's a good one.
Where does her money come from? Like, who's that character?
Now you got me wondering. Hold on. Now I gotta add you a little Googles. You know what? Guinan. Because,
whoa.
Right?
Where'd her money come from? It's because she's the oldest one.
She's the oldest one. She runs that bar. She knows everyone's tea. Yeah, Guinan.
Fair.
Yeah.
All right. As we're wrapping up, because I want to be respectful of your time, tomorrow's a big day for you.
Yes.
Where can people find you to keep up to date on not only your track work, but everything else?
So I'm not on that site formerly known as Twitter anymore, but if you want to go there, Instagram, TikTok, or Threads, at Steph_I_Will. You can also check out whysteph.com, my website. And yeah, I'll be not tweeting, but I'll be posting tomorrow. I plan on going to my local comic book store to pick up that issue and be all smiles because I haven't got my comps yet. So I'm like, even if I got them, I'd probably still go into the comic book store and like kick the door open. Like, hey, y'all, I'm here to pick up my books.
And like, are you still in the Chicagoland area?
No, I'm in Charlotte. So okay. Heroes Aren't Hard to Find is my place. So if you're ever in Charlotte, I cannot recommend them or Rebel Comics enough. Two top tier comic book stores.
Excellent. And nice. Since we just touched on Chicago, I will plug First Aid Comics in Hyde Park. Phenomenal comic store too. So, and we just saw the owner. He came up for a con here. SpringCon in Minnesota. So
sweet.
Yeah. Go out, support your local comic book store, grab the Star Trek Pride special and all the other Star Trek comics while you're at it, because they're good. There are some good storylines going on and there's even more greatness coming out. So you have time to catch up before Stephanie's next story hits the stands.
Yes. Oh, I'm so excited.
Thank you so much, Stephanie. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Let us know your reactions to the Pride special so I can package up some great comments and send them on to Stephanie.
Thanks, all. Be well.
Yeah, bye, y'all. Bye.